I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the state's largest public school district announces it might have to close 20 elementary schools. That sounds bad for them, but the truth is they're getting what they asked for. Not figuratively, quite literally.
You don't have to participate. You can withdraw altogether.
Meanwhile, an anonymous letter laments what they call a growing conservative influence in schools in Washington state. Plus, a King 5 News report downplays campus violence. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We're about to wrap up our first full week in the new studio. We didn't have nothing burned down. Nicole and I still like each other. In fact, today started out well for me. You know why? Nicole got me a coffee. At Starbucks, I'll give you a free ad. It's Starbucks today. So I'm going to need $20,000 for this appearance.
They got it.
Nicole, thank you. Nicole's like, did you go get me a coffee? Because sometimes I go with minutes left before the show to get a coffee and it stresses you out.
Yes, that's exactly why I was like, I'm going to go get it.
Because that's so nice.
I'm on top of it today.
So I thought you did it because you like me and we made it through our first week and all that.
I love
good.
Buying you your $10 latte.
You put it on the company card.
No.
Oh, you bought it for me?
Yes.
That's so nice. Thank you. Okay. all right. It's not $10. It was $8. Like, let's be honest here. All right. So we have some news on the education front that I want to start with. And if I haven't said it before, education is the most important issue. Education is the most important issue. I don't know that we cover it as much as we should. But if you can get our education system under control, back to the basics, making sure that you are putting out functioning, healthy adults once they graduate, so many of the other societal issues that we face will just take care of themselves. But that's not what's happening right now, at least not in Washington state. And there are consequences for that. Parents have realized that maybe public schools in this state aren't the place that they want to send their kids. Maybe that's not where their kids are going to get the best education, the best life skills, and maybe, just maybe, I don't know, this is a guess, parents don't want their kids indoctrinated with these insane social and political agendas. And we have had more than ample evidence to show that that's happening in a lot of our schools. Is it happening in every school? No. Is it happening with every teacher? Of course not. But it's not our job as journalists to focus on the things that are working real great. It's our job to focus on the things that are broken and to hold the government accountable for those things. And that's what we're going to do. So something really big happened last night. We've been talking, and we talked on the show on Monday, about how a lot of school districts are facing budget cuts. The primary reason they're facing budget cuts is their enrollment is down. Fewer students, less money, budget cuts, right? So the Seattle Public School District, the largest public school district in the state, is no exception to that. Here's what happened, a little clip at the meeting last night.
Vice President Sarju?
Aye.
Director Topp?
Aye.
Director Briggs?
Aye.
Director Clark?
Aye.
Director Hersey?
Aye.
President Rankin?
Aye.
This motion has passed unanimously.
What is the motion? Well, the motion is that they might have to proceed with closing possibly 20 elementary schools in the Seattle Public School District, and there are only about 70 of them. So think about that. Even in a city the size of Seattle, closing 20 or more elementary schools to deal with a budget deficit. Here's a story from the Seattle Times. Seattle School OK's proposal that could close 20 elementary schools. The district is hoping to dig itself out of a deficit caused by years of spending more money than it took in. Wow. Oh my gosh, that was in the Times? Thank you for so accurately laying out what creates a deficit. I mean, that is really the bare bones of what it is. I love that line so much. I'm going to read it again. The district is hoping to dig itself out of a deficit caused by years of spending more money than it took in. That's the story in a nutshell. Federal COVID relief dollars have dried up. The district has lost more than 4,000 students since pre-pandemic years. And a three-year teachers union contract inked in 2022 was projected to cost the district about $231 million over its term and add $94 million to the deficit. You don't say. So those the unions that fought for higher teacher pay and said that they were doing it for the kids, You mean that that actually is going to hurt the kids? Wow, shocker. I wonder, I wish somebody had warned them of that possible consequence. Goes on to say, Seattle is among many districts contemplating closing schools as education systems across the country confront the end of COVID relief aid and declining enrollment, which is the largest determining factor in the amount of taxpayer funds school districts receive from their state governments. Enrollment had been declining in some cities before the pandemic, but the federal funds gave districts room to delay difficult budget decisions. I think that's a very important thing, because even the Times is saying you can't blame all this on COVID. There was declining enrollment before then. In fact, COVID just helped you put off the cuts. Although the school closures aren't expected to take effect until the fall of 2025, the district is also wrestling with how to shed $105 million from next school year's estimated $1.1 billion budget. Now, I mentioned at the top of the show in our tease that, like, this sucks for parents, right? It sucks for kids if you've got an elementary school you like that's close to your home or whatever it is, and now you're facing 20 of them closing down, and then you're going to cram all those kids in other elementary schools. That definitely sucks. However, this is the fault of the school district. And it's not some outcome that is out of their control. This is actually what they asked for. Specifically, and I'll prove that point with receipts. So at last night's meeting, one of the school board members talked about this debacle, this situation that they're in, and how it's going to make it hard, but they need to do what they can to convince the state of Washington, despite the declining enrollment, to make sure that they're well funded.
We all go together and say, look, here is what we have done, and all what we need now is this funding for these reasons to support our students, and we cannot do that part unless you step up and help us. Right now, we don't have a whole lot to stand on when we have 29 schools with under 300 kids.
29 schools with under 300 kids. That's Seattle School Board member Liza Rankin. And she's basically saying, like, look, we need this money for our kids. Oh, we need to get more money from the state to make sure that we're serving our kids, when she knows full well that the underlying reason why they'd be getting less money from the state is because their enrollment has dropped. Now, here is a clip of that same Seattle school board member, Liza Rankin, less than a year ago in September 2023, when there were some parents pushing back against the curriculum in Seattle public schools.
If it is so contrary to your values, what is being presented in public schools in alignment with the will of the voting public, you don't have to participate. You can withdraw altogether. Public school is a right that is afforded to everyone who lives in our communities, but no one is forcing you to participate.
No one is forcing you to participate. That's gold. That's gold. Thank you, Don Land, for making sure we saw that today. That same Seattle Public School Board member who last night, oh, we've got to be able to serve our kids. We need to make sure we make the case to the state of Washington why we need more funds, despite the fact our enrollment has dropped by 4,000 students. When in September of last year, she looked parents in the eye and told them, you don't have to be here if you don't want to be here. If you don't share our values and the values of our community. And she says it, by the way, with two gay pride, a transgender pride flag sitting right in front of her. If you don't share our values, then you don't have to be here. Public school is optional. Take your kids somewhere else. Well, they are taking their kids elsewhere. They're homeschooling them. They're putting them in private schools. And you told them to do it. So this is the exact outcome that you asked for. That's not hyperbole, that literally you asked for this outcome. You told parents to their face, if they didn't like the school district and what the school district is shoving down the throat of their kids, that they should take them and could take them and go somewhere else. Well, they did. And now you're going to have to close about 20 elementary schools. And no, we are not going to sit back and allow you to do that, get the outcome that you asked for, and then go whining to Olympia to get more of our money, more of our tax money, because you got the exact outcome that you'd hoped for. Insane stuff. And, you know, it's not just Seattle Public School District. We talked, we had an exclusive on the show on Tuesday about the North Shore School District. The North Shore School District in Bothell has been facing budget cuts for several years now. And this latest budget cut, I think they face a $26 million budget shortfall. And we had the exclusive on Tuesday. $26 million budget shortfall, taking away programs and staff that are actually beneficial to kids, and at the same time posting a position for an executive director of racial and educational justice at $250,000 a year salary. So you just can't take them seriously. And with schools like that in North Shore, how could the state, I mean, I know that state lawmakers love to just dole out money to their buddies in the WEA, but when you have schools that, what was the first line in the Seattle Times article? Hold on. The district is hoping to dig itself out of a deficit caused by years of spending more money than it took in. When you have school districts that are just spending more money than they're taking in, that are actively telling parents who disagree with some of the curriculum, we don't want you here. When you have school districts that are spending $234,000 on an executive director of racial and educational justice, please tell me you're not going to give more money to them to try to prop up this disaster. The proof is in the pudding. And in this case, the pudding is the kids. Kid pudding. Child pudding. Is that weird? The pudding is the enrollment. And enrollment is way down. And until you wake up and start to actually address and talk about the reasons why kids... I mean, we had Chris Reichdahl here not long ago. And we had him here asking him about the declining enrollment. And, you know, he suggested, well, a lot of that was pandemic related and it just hasn't quite reached back pre-pandemic levels. And, you know, parents might keep their kids home in elementary because it's easier to teach an elementary school kid as a parent than it is to teach a high school parent. So we expect them to be back. But completely unwilling to have a difficult conversation about maybe there are just more parents than you think who are really upset with what you're teaching kids, who are really upset with how far afield you're getting away from the basics of education. And until the state can wake up and realize that and serve all parents, not just the maybe 30% who support those extreme ideologies being pushed on kids, et cetera, and actually look at, hey, a majority of parents don't like this, even if they're not willing to speak out about it publicly because they're worried about the repercussions of that. So unless you're willing to have the hard conversations, you're going to continue to have declining enrollment and parents looking for other options. On the educational front as well, I saw this story today. In fact, our friend Todd Myers had pushed it out, and I thought, for the love. So this story is twofold. It's a failure of the media in even covering it in the first place. But it's also just indicative of this desire to keep bringing the public school system down, despite all these other factors that are showing that part of the reason why it's declining is the lack of quality education and the lack of focus on academics. So this is from the Washington State Standard. The headline, "Is Washington School Board Association Seeing a Conservative Takeover?" Anonymous members say changes in the group's voting rules are allowing anti-LGBTQIA+ measures and efforts to roll back diversity and equity initiatives to gain traction. Allow me to read from this stunning piece of journalism for you. Members of a nonpartisan state agency made up of local school board officials from across Washington are warning that conservative groups opposed to teaching about race and gender in schools are wielding increased influence within the organization's ranks. An unknown number of Washington State School Directors Association members outlined their concerns in an anonymous letter released last month. The letter contends that school board members and directors connected with Moms for Liberty and other conservative groups in Washington are, quote, actively working to undo recent progress around diversity, equity, and inclusion in public schools, enact anti-LGBTQIA+ measures, and have a stated agenda to try to move public money to charter schools and school choice vouchers. Quote, this is an organized effort to use this state-funded agency to serve a very narrow and harmful agenda that would set Washington's public schools back 50 years, the letter read. It adds that the movement threatens to delegitimize WSSDA as a state advocacy organization. Wow, there's a lot to unpack there. So you have this state agency. It's made up of local school board officials from across the state. And some of them, maybe, but an unknown number of them wrote a letter saying they were concerned that some people are anti-gay on the board and too conservative, and they're going to take the public school system back 50 years, and it's really scary because they want to give money to charter schools. So the first problem here, and this is the failure of the media, why would you do a whole article based on a letter whose authors are anonymous and who you acknowledge you cannot tell us how many even signed on to it or how many were behind it? So you don't even know if the person or persons who wrote the letter are members of this board, right? Right? And you don't know how many it is. So you have this massive board with all of these members across the state, and you're doing an entire article based on anonymous, maybe board members, and maybe just one board member, or maybe more, we don't know. How is that a news story? How in the world is that a news story? I also have to laugh at the entire framing of it, because all of the stuff they talked about in there is like, great. I'm like, oh, they're trying to undo recent progress around DEI? Great, because DEI is racist, and DEI is part of the reason why parents don't want their kids in public schools. And any journalist who cares to approach a situation like this in an unbiased fashion would realize exactly what this is. This is the tentacles of the WEA. You can see it quite clearly, the Washington Education Association, the most powerful union in the state of Washington. Because you have that little quote in the letter that says they're trying to move public money to charter schools and school choice vouchers, which public school teachers and the public school union are very opposed to, obviously, because if you as a taxpayer, because it's like, what, $17,000 per pupil in Washington state. That's the cost in taxpayer money per pupil that goes into the public school system. So if you then take the cost per pupil and you're allowing parents to have, instead of, they have school choice, they can now use that money and the state will give them a voucher to send their child to a charter school. You will have flight from public school systems like we have never seen before. Because for a lot of families, the only barrier to leaving a crumbling public school system is money. It costs a lot of money to put your kid in a private school. It costs a lot of money to have a parent that's staying home and maybe stepping away from their job to homeschool a child. Now, if you take that financial aspect out of it and you give parents a choice, a lot of parents are going to choose that public school isn't the best place for their kids. And the school districts and the Washington Education Association know that, and that's why they oppose school choice. Because think about that. If you thought, as a public school system, as the OSPI head, as the Washington Education Association, if you thought that the education, the quality education you were providing in public schools was top-notch, right, and you were really proud of it, why would you oppose parents having a choice? Where you could tell parents, hey, either you take public school or a charter school that you don't have to pay for, you know, that comes taxpayer-funded for both of them. If they were confident in the quality of the education that they were giving kids, wouldn't you do that? It's like the people who want to take Donald Trump off the ballot. It's like, well, why are you taking a choice away? Why don't you give people a better choice so they vote for your person? But the public school system and the WEA, they know that a lot of parents would choose charter schools because the public school system is a failure. So they want to force parents. They want to force parents to stay in public schools because they cannot afford to instead. So what this letter is a couple of probably WEA members who are like, we got to paint this as a right-wing extremism taking over this statewide board. And so let's just write an anonymous letter. It's just like, or it's just me. It's just some wacko. And they push it out and the Washington State Standard does a whole story on it. Real crazy stuff. Let's go on. The letter's authors said conservative groups have gained influence within the association because of new rules that allow each district to have one vote. This means a district serving 100 students has the same power as one with 10,000 students. But the letter says this change is allowing conservative school board members to press ahead with attempts to revise the association's positions to remove language promoting diversity and equity. Another proposal seeks to make local control the guiding principle of the organization's advocacy platform in Olympia. And conservatives would prefer local control for this very reason. These proposals could be considered at the association's General Assembly meeting this September. And this is the peace day. I've been using the phrase peace day resistance a lot lately. This is the real kicker for me. This is a quote from the letter. Who authored these proposals remains unanswered. Continuing the concerning trend that positions intended to guide WSSDA's operations and advocacy are being created by an outside entity rather than solely by elected board directors, as is the objective and intent. So these anonymous letter writers who don't like the idea of local control of school districts because they want all the school districts to be Seattle style in their DEI and all of that. We can't let local districts and conservatives control the school districts in their own areas. We can't have that. We need to control everything. We need to make sure all the ideologies align. So these letter writers or letter writer, anonymous, unknown, that are saying, well, these proposals for local control and to revise language around diversity and equity, who authored those proposals remains a mystery, they write in their anonymous letter. So you're mad because you don't know who's authoring these conservative, extreme, dangerous proposals, and you're thinking, well, maybe it's Moms for Liberty. Meanwhile, you're writing an anonymous letter, and you're not putting your names forth with this opinion opposed to it, so you can be anonymous, but they can't be anonymous. These people are. It's too easy with them. It's too easy to show how utterly insane that is. I also, again, I don't understand the opposition to local control. Why would you not? This is similar to, you know, why I agreed with the decision to, I know I'm getting far afield, but the decision to send Roe, you know, reverse Roe, send the abortion issue back to the states. It's like you have then as an American on a highly contentious issue, you have a choice. If you really live and die by the abortion issue, then you can move somewhere else. And the same with schools. It's like you can go to a school and you can move your family to a place in the state of Washington where a school aligns with either your values. Like if you want to go to a school in Seattle where they push gender ideology and they let their kids walk out in solidarity with Hamas and all of that, and you're cool, like that's great. But if you don't agree with that and you want your child to focus on education, you can choose a school district in Washington state that's more focused on that. And it's the WEA doesn't want that because the WEA and its teachers and activists, they want to continue to push their ideology down the throats of kids because they're training them to be future activists and future Democrats and to continue on into the world and carry on their tradition. I'm sorry, that's not a conspiracy. That's just true. That is a Brandy certified fact. I said it, so it has to be true. Has to be what's going on. This is really crazy stuff. I'm very curious to hear you guys' thoughts on whether this letter is something that should have even been published. Nicole, am I crazy on that? If I came to you with some letter and I was like, as a producer, and it was anonymous and we didn't even know how many people signed it or wrote onto it, I feel like we would never run it.
Well,
it could have been a...
I agree. I'm not convinced that it really is anonymous to them, right? I'm sure that they know. They just didn't want to put their name published.
No. You're saying to the Washington State Standard?
Yes.
No, they said it's an anonymous members. What would have been written is like we got the letter and they gave it to us on the condition of anonymity. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing. There's no qualifier in there that says that. And then they also had a quote from like the head of the board who says basically we don't. Who even is this? You know, we don't
know.
To
me, that just means they agree with everything written. Because if you didn't, you would want to verify.
Right. You really think that they would publish an anonymous letter from the right saying that, the far left has infiltrated the education system? Of course not. It's just this real, real just soaking bias. And again, I go back to the biggest argument that I have for, well, there's a lot of things here, but the charter schools thing. What? It's like, I'm trying to find another good comparison for it. But it's like, you get a divorce and you got to decide who the dog wants, right? And it's like, you and your ex-husband are standing there and the dog's there. And one of you has got a bunch of treats behind your back. That's the WEA. That's the public school system. They're like, they want to tip things in their favor because they don't think the dog will come to them otherwise. So
like what you were saying, where people can just move if they don't want it. I mean, that's a great thought, but it is kind of, you have to uproot your life sometimes to make that happen. And so charter schools is a way to avoid that. But again, that's what they don't want.
Yeah, 100%. So they don't want that. They want mind virus in kids and all of that. Speaking of, I mentioned another issue that people can move if they don't agree with is the abortion issue. RFK Jr. had a shocking statement to me on his stance on abortion. We're going to have a conversation, debate, discussion about that coming up next. First, I've urged you guys to take the First Mark challenge. All of us need insurance. The insurance industry is crazy right now. Utterly insane. People getting their rates doubled, getting dropped from their carriers for making even a small claim. You need to have an insurance broker on your side to navigate the market for you, to fight with insurance companies if they're trying to drop you or double your rates or find you a different carrier. Mike and I are members of the First Mark family. We have been for a year. The Undivided podcast is insured by First Mark Insurance because we love the service that we get from them so much personally that we extended that into our professional lives as well. Let's see, Casey and Covington told us of the First Mark Challenge. I want to thank you for telling us to check out First Mark Insurance. I did the First Mark Challenge a couple weeks ago after receiving a ridiculous renewal statement from my insurance. We made the switch to policies with First Mark and walked away with slightly better homeowners insurance for the same price, nearly down to the dollar, and they managed to save us 37% off our auto quote for the same coverage. I love hearing stories like that. And again, it's not just the monetary savings that they can go out and get for you, but it's also the customer service that they provide. I mean, personal emails, follow-up emails. When I was on vacation last week, I was, you know, getting the new insurance for the podcast studio, and I was on vacation, so I wasn't checking emails, and they were checking in with me. Rosemary was like, "Hey, Brandy, just making sure. Did you get this?" And so it's just nice because they're reminding you and it's personalized. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're on your side every step of the way. All right. RFK Jr., I think, is maybe an intriguing option for people who don't like the other two options. And I don't particularly love the other two options, Biden or Trump. I don't particularly want to see that rematch. That's sort of the situation that we're in right now as a country because the two-party system, and it's absolutely terrible, and it robs Americans of choices. But then there's RFK Jr. Started in the race as a Democrat, switched to being an independent after it was clear that the Democratic Party was going to shun him because you're not allowed to run against an incumbent and be welcomed within your party. So he goes on the Sage Steele podcast, and the topic of abortion came up and where he stands on that issue. And I will give it to him that he gives a straight answer on a question that most Democrats are very good at dodging.
So in other words, keeping it as is with Roe versus Wade having been overturned and leaving it up to the states to determine if and when a woman can have an abortion?
No, I wouldn't leave it to the states.
You wouldn't, right.
No, I would.
You would say completely... It's up to the woman.
My belief is we should leave it to the woman. We shouldn't have government involved.
Even if it's full term?
Even if it's full term.
Okay.
That's crazy stuff. And this is something, and the reason I wanted to put this high up in the show today is because, and this is, again, a failure of the media, and I was probably complicit in that when I was in the mainstream media as well. I've told you guys I'm pro-choice. But that doesn't mean without any qualifiers. I'm pro-choice at this moment in my life up to the point of fetal viability. And this is an issue I've struggled a lot with because I firmly believe in limited government intervention in our lives. And so that's how I come to that position, is I do believe that these are decisions that should be between a woman and her doctor, just as I believe that the COVID vaccine was not something for the government to force upon us under threat of losing our employment. And I know that there are some hardcore libertarians and even some hardcore conservatives who do agree that the government really needs to back away from the issue of abortion because they're caught between, you know, for some conservatives, their faith, right? And their belief in limited government. And so they're forced to sort of, on this particular issue, make a choice between the two. But one of the things the media often fails at is painting a position like that as extreme, which it is. When you're talking about a full term, that's in his own words, full term abortion, by any stretch, that's extreme. That's not something that the vast majority of Americans support. And you'll have some Democrats come back and say, yeah, but that doesn't happen. Nobody does that. But here's the thing. This idea that you would allow full term abortions just for the sake of keeping the government out of our private medical decisions, why doesn't that extend to other things then? You're really telling me that you want the United States and the government and the FDA and all that not to regulate the medical industry at all? Like just to let like total carte blanche, have doctors inject and do what they want, no rules and regulations? Of course not. There are a ton of regulations in the medical industry for doctors, for like Pfizer and all this stuff. that are important and critical. So you can't on one hand say, well, we need to keep the government out of women's medical decisions and let them have full-term abortions if they want to. You can't say that on one hand unless you're saying, let's get rid of all the other government regulations around medical care and health care, which you would never say that because that would be absurd. We'd have pharmaceutical companies just pushing out stuff that never went through rounds of testing and, you know, like COVID vaccine, but you know what I mean? And just pushing out stuff and saying, hey, let's just try this on the American populace. There aren't consequences because there aren't regulations. That's just stupid. You have to have on everything. Limited government doesn't mean like, oh, just let everybody run wild. No, society has to live within some guardrails. The idea of limited government is let's make those guardrails limited and only what's necessary. Big government people, they want to throw in regulations that aren't necessary to regulate things or over-regulate things that are doing just fine. And so this idea that, you know, in the name of giving women a choice, you would be okay with aborting a full-term child, a human child? That's really extreme stuff. And the media has not done a good job of pressing Democrats on that position. You know, in Washington State, one of the biggest issues that Democrats knock Republicans about, and Dave Reichert is, he's anti-choice. They use anti-choice because they don't want to use pro-life because pro-life sounds great. So they use anti-choice. And so that's the fear-mongering. They did it to Tiffany Smiley in the 2022 Senate race. Like, she doesn't like women, hates women, all of this stuff. And the media just runs with it. And the media is very eager with Republicans to pin down, as they should, pin down their position on abortion. I'm not saying the media shouldn't scrutinize and question the Republican positions on abortion. But you should also be scrutinizing and questioning the Democratic positions on abortion, particularly if they're not in favor of any limitations and they would have late-term abortions and full-term abortions. So there needs to be, if you're truly trying to approach it in an unbiased way, you need to look at both of those things as equally extreme. And in fact, that is the topic of our daily subscriber show poll. I asked you guys, do you believe opposing any restriction on full-term abortion is more extreme or less extreme than supporting a 6-week abortion ban? Just as an example, because the 6-week abortion ban has been, and I think that's extreme. I think 6-week abortion ban is incredibly extreme because most women do not even realize that they're pregnant at that point and cannot make a decision. So it's basically forced pregnancy by the government, which is crazy, crazy stuff. But I don't see it as any more extreme or any less extreme as somebody saying even late term or full term abortions. So I asked you guys, do you believe opposing any restriction on full-term abortion is more extreme or less extreme than supporting a 6-week abortion ban? And there's definitely a lot of disagreement here. A lot of people saying equally extreme, but a good chunk of you right now saying more extreme. Average Joe says, any reason feels like an intentional troll. What are you talking about? Any reason? Okay, I'm going to skip that because I don't know what he's talking about. Christine Dana, I know I will probably catch some hate for this, but I am pro-choice up to 20 weeks. At 20 weeks, you go in for an ultrasound, most people just to learn the gender of the coming baby. But at that ultrasound, you can also see if there are any abnormalities or birth defects that may mean that the child's quality of life or lack thereof can be determined. Christine, I'm not going to give you hate for that because that's my position as well, which I do get hate for on this show, and I understand that. But Washington State's law is up to the point of fetal viability, which my only disagreement with that, like if I was in office, I would never seek to change it. But my only disagreement with that is I think it needs to be a little more firm because it leaves it open to a doctor's judgment. But I think if you're going with like 21 weeks or 24 weeks or something like that and actually have that in law. David Sprinkle says, I'm not sure any man except the father of the unborn child should have any say over this. Similarly, those who advocated mandatory jabs should have no right to use my body, my choice in the debate. Pete says, this is a trap that our side always falls for. If you try to legislate anything abortion, it becomes ammo for the nastiest of the left to succeed with. Don't even bring it up unless you want Governor Shama Sawant. Yeah, oh my gosh, don't even put that thought in my head. Kyle T., even left-leaning folks are now admitting that abortion is the ending of a human life, some even calling it murder, and that they're okay with it. Protecting life isn't extreme. Making excuses for killing full-term babies is. Chris McKenzie, I'm one of those people who support abortion rights up to birth. Oh, Chris, I would be very curious to hear sort of the logic on that. In line of what I said earlier, which is if you're coming to that position from a limited government perspective, limited government intervention, then do you want to see the government do away with other regulations on health care. Because that's the sticking point for me is like, I mean, making murder against the law is a government regulation, right? It's like technically there have to be some government regulations on how the guardrails, again, that we as a society agree that we're going to live within. I think they can be reasonable, but, you know, deregulation, if you look at it like this, is like, oh, well, let's get away with murder. Or let's do away with the regulation against killing other human beings, you know? And so I feel like, I'm curious, Chris, I do want to hear genuinely, if you support abortion rights up to birth, what you have to say about other medical regulations in the United States of America. Just an interesting conversation and debate, but I don't know if RFK is trying to now try to appeal more to the left, because there's this ongoing debate about who he's going to pull votes from. I just think he pulls, up until this point, I thought he'd pull votes away from Donald Trump, but even moderate, and I think even moderate Democrats, independents, realize that full-term abortion is a really extreme position. So keep weighing in on that. I'm very curious to hear your guys' take on that particular issue. I do hope the Seattle media, though, when it comes time for interviews on the congressional races, in the governor's race, asks Bob Ferguson, ask the Democrats running for Congress, where pinpoints their position on that, as Steele did in that interview with RFK Jr. Do you support late-term abortions? Would you support expanding Washington's abortion rights to include late-term abortions, no restrictions, full-term abortions? If the media is not doing that, it's not doing its job. And I'm going to have another story about the media not doing its job coming up next. First, we added a new sponsor, Natchez RV Resort out in Sela. And it's been really fun because I was posting about it on social media, and we're creating this whole little vision in our mind of all these sane people who just go out and get a lot at Natchez RV Resort, and we just live our lives completely unbothered out there. But they are having their grand opening of their phase two May 18th and 19th. So what they have is 21 extra large RV lots complete with water, power, and sewer, and grand opening pricing starting at only $79.9. Ty with Natchez RV Resort said, if you want to pick one of these up, you're going to probably be among like-minded people.
It's an awesome group of people. I can't say better things. It's all very like-minded people. I'm sure a lot of them listen to your show. A lot of people still living and working over here in the greater Seattle area that just want that home base to go to, and they want quality. They want to keep it a resort and not just have it be a park. And it's very tough these days with RVers for them to find a place to go, especially a quality spot. This is one they own. They can treat it like a second home, have their big RV sitting over there. If they get off work on a Friday and feel like just shooting over there, they know it's an option. They can also, when they're not using the lot, we have a great rental program where we can put it into the rental pool, and they can rent it back out or weekend to the general public and have them bring some money coming in for them when they're not using it.
Yeah, that's Tig with Natchez RV Resort. And when he says quality, they have, I mean, year-round family fun, 300 days of sunshine, hunting, snow skiing, golf, river rafting, wine tasting. They have a new 4,300-square-foot clubhouse, gourmet kitchen, great room, fitness center, showers and laundry. Their swimming pool and hot tub are coming soon. So this is a high, high-quality resort, and they've only got 21 extra large lots left for this grand opening weekend, May 18th and 19th. So you can reserve your reservation now at 800-422-6009, 800-422-6009, NatchezRVResort.com. All right, so we know that the campus protest at the University of Washington has had violence there. We know that because we've seen it on video. We've seen the blood. We've seen the fights. Now, am I saying, and have I ever said, that all these campus protests are violent and all the protesters are violent? No, because nuance is our friend. And I tend to think that we're pretty good at nuance here on the Undivided Podcast. But to cover, as a journalist, as a commentator, whatever it is, to cover what's happening at UW and completely ignore violence, that's a choice. That's a choice to ignore it and to hide it from your viewers or your readers. And that's exactly what King 5 News did. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. So just as a reminder, the pro-Palestine demonstration at UW, and it had been, you know, some scuffles here and there. And then when Charlie Kirk came to town on Tuesday night, there were full-blown fights. Jonathan Cho's security guard ended up getting jumped by a handful of Antifa rioters.
You okay? We should call the cops.
Yeah. And so there was no question. That wasn't the only time. Jonathan Cho had been there over the weekend. He got attacked. He had a big gash on his hand. And there had been other melees and other fights between the two sides. And it was clear. It was all over social media. Undeniable. Can't avoid it. Again, you don't have to paint the whole thing as violent. Charlie Kirk was able to come. He had his event. It was a huge showing and all of that. And then you had people who just remained in their camp at UW. And they didn't participate in the, you know, blocking things and blocking paths and all of that. But violence happened. And as the media, if you want to paint a full and accurate picture, you can't leave that out, right? Well, apparently at King 5 News, you can. So there is a report that night from Cornelius Hocker with King 5 News. And the entire report, if you only watched King 5 News, you would believe that this was just a peaceful, righteous, love fest, pro-peace gathering for Gaza.
From the UW light rail station to the Quad on campus, demonstrators led by the grassroots group Palestinian Youth Movement marched to the University of Washington to support the students in this encampment.
We've seen time and time again how the students have led the fight for justice, for freedom.
Hossam says the people in Gaza see what's happening on college campuses.
Said that the student movement, what they call the student intifada, is what has been giving them hope.
So, okay. The whole thing was like that. Oh, love for Palestine, grassroots. Like, okay, listen, the grassroots. Let's not pretend that there aren't outside forces that are organizing all of this. Oh, and then there's this part of the story where it talks about, and it shows, you know, people in hospitals in Gaza, and the whole thing is just entirely from the perspective of these protesters. What they're doing is wonderful. What these kids are doing is going to save the world, right? And so you watch the whole story, nothing about Charlie Kirk's appearance, nothing about the violence, until the news anchor at King 5 asks Cornelius Hocker this follow-up question at the end of the report.
Obviously, it looks very quiet out there right now. I know the university had told us earlier that it had put extra security out there, at least earlier. Do we know why that was?
Yeah, so tonight there was a, I guess you could call it, a conservative provocateur on campus holding an event, and the university did not want those two groups to interact. However, there were some interactions, you know, some yelling back and forth, but it didn't get that serious. Greg?
Can you play that again, Nicole? It's utterly insane to me.
Obviously, it looks very quiet out there right now. I know the university had told us earlier that it had put extra security out there, at least earlier. Do we know why that was?
Yeah, so tonight there was a, I guess you could call it, a conservative provocateur on campus holding an event, and the university did not want those two groups to interact. However, there were some interactions, you know, some yelling back and forth, but it didn't get that serious. Greg?
It didn't get that serious. Tell that to Jonathan Cho's security guard.
You okay? We should call the cops.
Yeah, bleeding from his neck, bleeding from his face. Cops had to be called. But it didn't get that serious. The other thing is the choice here. And I want to set this up just again. I'm not a journalist anymore, and I never pretend to be. I'm a political commentator. I'm here to give my opinion. I don't want King 5 News to do what I do. I don't want King 5 News to take positions, to show their bias and all of that. So there's a different standard here. But I'm going to put my journalist cap back on. You know, I was a journalist for a long time. I think I was an okay one. And if you're approaching this story, the only mention of Charlie Kirk, there were lines around the quad of people who showed up to hear a national political figure talk and welcome debate on what was happening on college campuses. And then, yes, you had protesters in the quad, and then in the middle you had some scuffling, right, and some fighting and some downright beatings. So if I'm a journalist approaching that, I'm thinking, how can I tell the totality of this situation while not giving any one group any favor? Because if it's just like three people in the quad and then 1,000 people for Charlie Kirk, and you focus on what's happening in the quad, that just shows an inherent bias. And that's what this reporter does. The entire story, because if you put if you take the bias this reporter had, a clear left bias, which we'll get to more in a second, and then you have a reporter that has a right bias, how would they cover the story? Well, they would cover Charlie Kirk's appearance and only Charlie Kirk's appearance. And they would talk about how great and wonderful it was and how Charlie Kirk is saving the country and all of this. And they would ignore what's happening on the Quad. So that would be equally bad. It would just be a different kind of bias. But a good journalist would look at this situation and would tell the story of what's happening on campus. And it's interesting. You know, a conservative provocateur, as he says, doesn't even name him. Charlie Kirk comes to campus, thousands of people, you know, 1,000 people, whatever it was, lined up to see him. Meantime, you know, just 50 yards away, you've got this protest in support of Palestine. The two sides clashed at points. Here's some video of an assault on a security guard. And then you can tell their stories and you can talk to them. But that's not what this was. This was just a pro-Palestine commercial. And without, you know, this looks like maybe a young journalist or something, and I'm not trying to, well, yeah, I am. You know what? Yeah, I am. You're a journalist in Seattle. You're on a news station in Seattle. This was a horrible story. Horrible, horrible, horrible. And I had to look at this reporter's X account. And then I was like, well, now it makes sense. So again, Cornelius Hocker, if we look at his X account, he's got a big trans rights banner. Trans rights are human rights in the banner, like the cover photo on his X account. It says, journalist, just a guy from Kentucky living the dream, clarinetist as well, hashtag Black Lives Matter, hashtag Black Trans Lives Matter. Okay. Now, I believe Black people's lives matter. I believe that trans people are human beings that are deserving of human rights. I believe all those things. But if you're a journalist at a major television station, and that is the forward-facing look of your social media, that tells me you're driven by ideology. You're driven by your position and your opinion on political and social issues. Because most of us, I hope, 99% of journalists, certainly in Seattle, they think Black Lives Matter. They might not support the group Black Lives Matter because it was just a fraud, of course, money laundering scheme. But do I have to say, like, it was like a money laundering scheme so I don't get sued? I mean, they just spent people's money on mansions and stuff. So a lot of people believe that, but that's not going to be their, you know, trans lives matter. It tells people you're ideologically driven. So when I watch a story like the one you did that went out to tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of households to influence their minds on what happened, and then I look at your social media, I'm like, that sounds about right. And I can't imagine if this was a reporter that had some sort of like a Blue Lives Matter flag. You think King 5 would allow one of their news reporters to have their main picture on their page be a Blue Lives Matter flag? Not a chance in hell. Absolutely not a chance in hell. But this is trans rights flag and it's Black Lives Matter. So you can't say anything about that. You can't say anything about that dripping with ideology. But if it were a right, an ideology on the right, which I don't think Blue Lives Matter is, but then not okay. And I know that's hypothetical, but I'm 100% confident that King 5 News would never allow a reporter to fly a Blue Lives flag in the profile of their official Twitter account. It's really insane stuff. And again, it just angers me because this is what people are getting. The vast majority of people, they're not doing what you're doing. You're not watching this show at noon on a weekday unless you are really, really into politics and social issues and what's happening in our state and in our country. But a lot of Americans, we have to remember, they're just passive news consumers. They turn on the news in the morning or at night to catch the weather and traffic, and then they might see a report like this, and they might be like, wow, look at these kids on campus, like fighting for Gaza, and nothing serious happened, and oh, some conservative provocateur was there. Shame on him, provoking people on campus and all these innocent kids. That's what happens. And then that's how we end up with the Governor Jay Inslee for three terms. I mean, it's all tied together, right? Really unbelievable. If you're in the market to sell your home at some point in 2024, my advice to you is to do what Bryce and Carla did. So Bryce and Carla, they retired to Florida. God bless them. I wish them well. And they knew that they sold their home in January. But Wes, they reached out to Wes Jones after hearing about him on our show. And he basically said, hey, take a couple months. You know, let's not list the home over the holidays, but you need to make some cosmetic updates to your home anyway. So take some time. Let's get that done. And then in January, right after the holiday rush, that's a great time to list your home. So they did everything that Wes told them to do, ended up selling their home over list price in 7 days. But one of the things Carla told us is she just really appreciated Wes Jones's bedside manner.
I'm just very detail oriented and never put down our property, because you could hear I-90 from our property, and it wasn't the most feng shui, yummy piece of property, and our furniture never showed our house well, our own personal furniture. But he was like, oh yeah, he could see in his mind, this will show after the paint and the staging, this will be a premium property. He could see that, and he didn't let us feel like it was a subpar home the way it was, you know? And others were like, oh, what is going on? We're gonna have to put a water feature on that deck because that noise. And I'm like, sorry.
Yeah, Wes has been doing this for a long time, and he does know, and he does realize that sometimes you do need to make some changes to your home just to make it appealing to more buyers in whatever city you're in or area, because he knows the kind of buyers that are going to be looking for a home in that area. So if you're planning on selling your home at any point this year, and you know, maybe I need to make some upgrades, or maybe I just don't want to be stressed out and have to do it all at once, reach out to Wes Jones. He's going to do a market analysis with you for free. You can use their home value calculator online, totally free, just to see how much your home is worth at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, and then you can talk to him about what needs to be done, the marketing side of it, and all of that to make sure you get top dollar for your home. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, we have another like blackface scandal, not scandal. Now look, do I really think that white people should be out there painting their faces black and like pretending to be a black person and dressing up? And no, I mean, I don't really care, I guess. Like, costumes are costumes. It doesn't bother me. This just really isn't something, but I'm also white, so whatever it is. If it bothers you, and like, if you're a Native American and it bothers you that somebody dresses up like a Native American for Halloween, like, who am I to say that it shouldn't bother you? But there are also, and have been, a lot of examples of people being accused of blackface who weren't engaged in blackface at all. I'm reminded of the kid, the little fan from the Redskins, which are they called the Redskins anymore? No, they're the Washington.
I think he was a Chief fan.
Chiefs fan. And the picture, remember, where it was a picture of one side of his face and he was doing the chop or whatever, and it was black, and this national sports outlet painted him as a little racist. It's like a tiny little kid. And it turns out the other side of his face was painted red, and they didn't show that. And so anyway, it just was his whole ordeal. So there was this story. It happened like pre-George Floyd. And so at the time, it didn't really get a lot of attention, but then the pictures were resurrected after George Floyd, and these kids were absolutely vilified. So there were these teens who were kicked out of a Catholic school because there was a picture of them in blackface. Okay, so the kids, post a picture in blackface. Look at us, white kids pretending to be black, all offensive and stuff, get kicked out of their Catholic school. And that was in Mountain View, St. Francis High School. Okay. In Mountain View, California, they were 14 when they took the photo of themselves wearing blackface, little racists. They took it during a sleepover in 2017. But here's the thing. That wasn't blackface. It was an acne mask. And it gets even better. Apparently, they put this on. It started green. And in the picture, it looks black, but it's not even black. It started green. It's like a seaweed acne mask. And you might say, well, why are these teen boys at a sleepover wearing an acne mask? Maybe they use the acne mask to pretend to be blackface. They had a friend who was suffering with bad acne that had to use this acne mask. So they all put the acne mask on.
Mommy bought it.
Oh, my God. Their mom bought it for them. It was a green like algae face mask, and they were doing it because their buddy had to wear it for his acne. So they're like, we'll do it too. 14 years old, gets resurrected. They get put out of their Catholic school for blackface, like shared widely to just spread this narrative of division during Black Lives Matter. Well, they sued, and they've now been awarded $1 million by a jury after they were able to prove that it was just an acne mask.
Mommy had the receipt.
Mommy had the receipt. There was all the story of the friend having acne came together. So these three kids get $1 million, which I don't think is enough, but get $1 million. The benefit of this, I will say, for them, versus like who is the Sandman, Nick Sandman, yep, who, you know, had his face. You can't really tell who they are, you know? So like this picture might be out there, but I don't think I'd recognize one of these kids on the street if they didn't have their LG mask on.
No, and they didn't, their names aren't in the lawsuit either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just their initials. But I do feel bad for the one kid. Maybe it's a kid that they're helping with the acne. His buddies got the money. He didn't.
Well, he wasn't. Yeah. He wasn't in the pic. Why should he get the money? He's the one who put him into that situation by having pimples.
I guess.
So really, it's his fault.
I guess. But yeah, how ridiculous are those adults? Mm-hmm. The adult educators or the adult administration that decided that it was a good idea to kick these kids out of school 2-3 years later.
Yeah.
After a picture was taken.
Well, from them when they were 14. And also, I'm positive these kids, their parents tried to explain to the school this was an LG mask for face acne.
Of course they did.
And of course they did. And the school's like, we don't believe you. We can't. Because they just, you know, bow
we're
to
just
the
still
mom.
Gonna, you know, bow.
God,
yeah, exactly.
It's so bad. It's really so bad. Anyway, congrats for those kids. And I hope that that has a chilling effect on other people like Nick Sandman. That whole ordeal, I really do. I mean, he made hundreds of millions of dollars in lawsuits off the major news networks, as he should have. And I've admitted in the past that I retweeted the initial video of Nick Sandman painted as he was like doing some sort of thing. And I apologized. And I was like, please don't sue me because I was wrong. And at least I'm willing to admit it, you know, and I hadn't vilified him to the extent other outlets did. And then you see the other half of it. But, you know, you had all those outlets that just. They never did a mea culpa, you know, and admitted like, hey, there was more to this, and they got sued to high heaven and rightfully so. But yeah, lessons maybe this will learned. This the Chiefs fan and all of that, maybe one would hope.
I don't think so on this one.
I do think that for media outlets, it's a consideration. We talk all the time about not getting sued, right? We have conversations all the time about fair use, copyright, not doing anything defamatory or whatever it is, because as a business, that's a huge consideration. One mistake can just put you out of business. And so for news networks, now having really paid the price for that with Nick Sandman, and then was it... What is the name? Deadline? Not Deadline. What's the sports outlet with the
Barstool?
Chiefs kid? No, it wasn't Barstool. Oh God, no.
Oh no.
No, it was
the ones that gotten.
Yeah, Dead something. Deadline. Dead. Somebody's gonna tell us in the chat. But anyway, it was a national sports outlet that ended up, and I don't know if there was. I think there was a lawsuit or something as a result of that. And so when you have to pay monetarily and you're really risking your entire business. I do believe it has the effect of having media outlets think twice before they get burned again on something like
dead
that.
Spin.
Deadspin. Thanks. Deadline. Deadspin. And so for media, as long as, look, the internet's always going to spread things, right? You can't stop with the internet and individuals and anonymous accounts do, but whether the media picks up on it, it is a big factor in how widespread something gets. And so if the media now has to take a pause, then yeah, you might have stuff circulating on social media, but it's not going to get the momentum that perhaps it once would. And that is a very good thing. So these lawsuits are a great way to restore sanity.
But I also think that administrators looking at this should have been like, well, that's ridiculous. Right. And we're not going to give it the attention people 100%. Are asking for on social media. They need to take the same lessons or do some Googling.
And hopefully, because it's a $1 million verdict, this isn't against a news agency. It's against the school. And so... But I also think we are getting at, that's the point we want to get, right? As a society where we can just say no to stupid stuff. Like, no, that's
please.
Not. Like, no, I'm not making these kids apologize for a seaweed acne mask. Like, go away, get out of my office and never come back with something stupid like this. So that's the point where we're trying to get where everyone can just say no to silly. And then sanity makes a comeback. So, all right, it is Thursday. I miss my sister already. I love being down in Florida with her, especially when she's not almost dead in a hospital bed. It was just so delightful. But, you know, we all got to get back to work. So it is our weekly edition of our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello. Howdy.
Howdy.
Howdy. So a couple stories. We're dealing with some of these pro-Palestine protests here, University of Washington, all over. And so is Florida. You're not immune from it. However, in a nice, delightful twist, your governor actually says something about it.
He does. He had a press conference just yesterday at the University of Florida. Again, just stating that he denounces these types of pro-Palestinian protests, as well as the encampments being created across the state. And he basically is just like, making sure everybody knows that it's just not going to happen in Florida. And apparently they did try to set up an encampment at the University of Florida, but it only took them a few minutes to put a stop to that. And just last month, I think it was like 9 people were arrested for aggressively being a part of protests at the University of Florida as well. So he kind of made a statement saying that these institutions across the country are just graduating a bunch of imbeciles who don't really understand history.
Yeah. Well, and look, I'm fine with protests, and I imagine the governor is too. I mean, there's more nuance in his comments about it. But there's the First Amendment, your First Amendment rights, and then there is intruding on other people's rights. And that's what we've seen with these efforts to set up areas, to block off public spaces on college campuses, and just downright anti-Semitism. And that's what I don't get, like, why our governor and even, you know, the chair of our state Democratic Party here can't see the difference in those things between First Amendment protected speech that's not infringing on anyone else, and what I would view as criminal civil unrest and also hate speech. It's just bizarre.
Yeah. And he does say that in, like, during his press conference, he did mention that, like, you don't have the right to take over spaces at a campus. You don't have the right to let people, or to not give people, like, a safe space to be on campus just for their religion or their ethnicity. So he does go on to, you know, say that it's more about the way these protests are kind of, like, happening and what they're doing during the protests that are the real problem.
Yeah, and they're also in Florida trying to make it more financially easier, feasible for students fleeing, like Jewish students or whatever, fleeing campuses where there's anti-Semitism, you know, waiving some of the transfer fees and the out-of-state fees. So I like that. Let's I mean, this is up and down the system. We talked about on the show today, just this lack of focus on what education should be focused on. All these other distractions for kids, political, social, whatever it is. And so it's gotten out of hand. All right, let's talk about Barron Trump, shall we?
Yes.
Now that he's 18, I think that's perfectly appropriate because we're talking about he's just getting started on his little political journey.
He is. He's been pretty much out of the spotlight compared to a lot of his other siblings for now, which I think is great because he was so young. But like you said, now he's 18. He'll be graduating high school this year. And the state Republican Party nominated him as one of their grassroots delegates for the Republican National Convention. So he'll be, this is his highest political ranking so far. So we'll see what he does with, you know, politics in general.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great place to start for anyone in politics who's interested, not even if they're interested in running, but interested in being involved and making a difference, like being a precinct committee officer, being a delegate, and getting to see how the whole process works. And so that's really cool. And yeah, I mean, I would hope it's his highest political position so far, because I think he just turned 18, right?
He did in March, yeah. I think his birthday was. And also, I think both of his brothers are, and then also his sister Tiffany is also a delegate for the RNC too. So,
yeah. Well, I wonder who he'll support as a delegate. I don't know. So anyway, all right, Miranda, it was lovely to spend a week with you down in Florida. We had a great time. So thank you for hosting Mike and I.
We did, and we didn't see any gators or crocodiles, which is, I guess, kind of a bummer for Mike, but good for Brandy because she's kind of past that point.
Yeah, I've been there. I mean, Mike was disappointed. He was looking everywhere. We'd drive and he'd be looking like they were just going to be crawling all over everything. And then he was bummed because he hadn't seen any iguanas. And then we go out for a morning walk on one of our last days and he sees 5 within a 45-minute span, including this massive one that he named Igu.
Yeah.
And then he did some research on the type of iguana Igu was, and he sat there, and it was kind of cute. I was slightly annoyed, but it was adorable. And he sat there in bed reading me all these facts about iguanas like Igu. And I was like, are you 12? Like, did I marry a 12-year-old? But he was very excited. So I was glad he got to finally see some iguanas. It was fun.
It's pretty awesome.
It is. Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Meow. Meow. Igu was cute. I mean, Mike was so jazzed about it. It really was kind of adorable. I was scared.
It's a simple thing.
Oh my God, it scared the hell out of me though, because we'd seen, you know, a couple little ones like as we walked out to the beach, and then we went on this walk down this boardwalk between the beach and the resort, and it was like still and it jumped out and I was like freaked out. Mike was so excited he was filming and I'm like walking away. I don't want to be anywhere near the iguana.
Wait, what? Why are you scared of an iguana? Have you ever heard of somebody dying from an iguana?
It's like a snake with legs. And it was fast. It was like, it was like a velociraptor.
They're way more scared of you than you are.
They remind me of the dinosaur that kills the fat guy on Jurassic Park.
The raptors?
No, the one that squirts like ink at him or something. And he's like, oh, and it's like in the original Jurassic Park. And it kills the fat guy. And they come from everywhere and just chew him and eat him.
Okay.
That's what it reminds me of. But anyway, then we walk
much
back.
Much smaller than that.
And all of a sudden we walk back and Igu, we're pretty sure it was also Igu, comes sprinting toward us. Like
he missed you.
He missed Mike, right? And then he went up a tree and then Mike sat there and looked at him up the tree. I was like, you are just the cutest 43-year-old man. All right, questions and comments. Kathleen Bros on schools. How much is all the DEI training and staffing costing? Enrollment has gone down because of it. They don't give exit interviews. Oh, that's interesting. So if you're a parent and you leave this school district, they're not asking you why you left? No. Don't you think that would be like any business?
I don't even think they ask the teachers or I don't think they ask anybody anymore. I think exit interviews are out the window.
Wow. Well, you'd think given the declining enrollment, they'd want to. So that is something
Do you really think they want to?
Yes. No, but yes, I would hope that that is something they care about.
Should want to.
I mean, listen to what the lady said at the thing last year. If you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. Mm-hmm. So they're like, okay, bye. that's an insane clip. Dawn Land, again, thank you for sending it because I just could not believe that compared to her now begging, oh, we can't serve our kids if we don't have all this money. Well, you should have been nicer to parents. Mm-hmm. You should have done your job as an and that's also what just drives me nuts. You're elected. You're an elected school board member to serve people. And that mindset is you're only going to serve people who agree with you as you're sitting there with two trans rights flags in front of you at a school board meeting. And so that's the opposite of what you should be doing. To the fact that you would sit there and say that and not sit there and listen to parents is so baffling to me. Why do you even want that job? That's just crazy. Bill says the school district parents got what they voted for. Nowhere man Matt says, would setting back 50 years be so bad? Wasn't that when education was at its best? It was funny because so in that article on the people raising the anonymous letter on the statewide board being infiltrated by conservative groups like Moms for Liberty. And if they get their way, they're going to set the education system back 50 years. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the threats Democrats have if the initiatives pass in November. This will set the state back decades. And I'm kind of like, okay, fine. Like that sounds, but it's fear. It's fear mongering as we cannot do this because it's going to undo all this wonderful progress that we've done as the state of Washington. So it's like the same people, same type of people who are reading that. We want to undo some of your version of progress because your version of progress is progress at any cost and for any reason or for no reason at all. Y says, I really wish they would give us vouchers to send our kids to private school. I'm grateful for the teachers my son had so far in public school, and most teachers at our school are amazing. But anticipating middle school and high school, I do not feel comfortable in the direction that they're going. Yeah, and you make a good point. Maybe I should do a better job of always qualifying it with there are so many good quality teachers out there. I feel bad for them too. I feel bad that they're caught up in this. They have a WEA, a union that's driven by ideology, and they're like, well, what do I do? And if you speak out about it, God forbid, they just want to teach kids. They got, you know, Miss Thompson down the room who's reading kids all these sex novels.
I don't know her.
Are you related? Is there any relation? Okay. I was trying to think of a name that like wouldn't be like racist or yeah, you know, would be just generic.
There you go.
Let me see here. Thank you. On abortion. Yeah, sorry. Not to say your name's generic. I didn't mean it like that, but where did I live off? On abortion, Mandy says, it's curious you must say human child in terms of a late term abortion. Is the child not yet human until it's recognized outside the room? No, it's probably just like a
I think you're using that
tongue
as an emphasis to be like, right, that's a human. That's a human.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Is like, if you're going to support now, just a, at that point, that's a living, breathing human being.
Right.
And I know that there's disagreement about at what point, you know, during the process, it's a child. And some people believe that's at conception. Some people believe it's later, whatever it is. And we're just going to have to agree to have our disagreements on that particular issue. But I think we are united in the belief, most of us, that a late term or full term abortion is insane. That's just extreme, just like a 6-week abortion ban is extreme, in my opinion. On King 5 News and their report, if you can even call it that, their propaganda for Hamas, Krista M. says, conservative provocateur, whose crowd was entirely peaceful while the other crowd was starting fights? Yeah, and I don't know that the right was entirely peaceful and that there wasn't some yelling and shouting or whatever it is. I did see one fight between some guy who appeared to be on the Charlie Kirk, fan club and others, and I didn't see who started the fight. Now, you know, I have my opinion on preponderance of the evidence and a history of demonstrated behavior to believe who might have done it, but could it have been the Charlie Kirk fan? Sure, I guess.
But if you're going to talk about provocateurs, then maybe mention Antifa. But no one will mention Antifa.
That is the thing, is like, you're going to paint Charlie Kirk as a conservative provocateur, fine, but it's not provoking to block kids from walking on campus. It's not provoking to beat up a security guard. It's not provoking to be in all black with your little half your little garbage cans holding up and yelling stuff at cops. It's not provoking to have a tent that says death to fascists when you deem fascist as anyone who disagrees with you. Yeah, that's a little bit provoking to me. On the blackface case, Matthew Cook says, man, I'm glad there weren't smartphones and social media when I was a kid with all the dumb crap I did. Oh, 100%.
Or just the bad photos I took and things like that.
Oh, yeah. And my blonde hair and my tan. And I put on one of those Playboy bunny stickers, you put on your tanning bed. And you put it next to, like, I even knew what Playboy Bunny meant. You put it next to your belly button and you get it off and it'd be a white Playboy Bunny. And be like,
now I just have my watch line. Playboy
Bunny. Yeah, now you have your watch line. Oh my gosh. Too funny. Mm-hmm. Krista M. says, how dare kids support one another and focus on self-care and hygiene? I think it's adorable that these kids wore an acne mask, like these teen boys, because their buddy's got acne and's got to have a stupid mask on.
And he's their buddy was suffering from
acne. It is so, so cute. Okay, so a really interesting and I think informative segment that I want to, before we get to Sanity Check today, we talk to Zach Abraham every week and, you know, gives us thoughts on the economy. But there was a clip that's been making its rounds all over conservative media. Man, I saw it on, I think Jesse Waters' show on Sean, what's Sean with Fox News? Sean Hannity, sorry. It was all over social media. And what it shows, I'll play a clip for you. So it's Jared Bernstein, who's Biden's chief economic advisor. And he's doing an interview for a documentary called Finding the Money that's like coming out now or soon. And what the documentary focuses on is something called modern monetary theory. And it basically, they're asking him why the government even borrows money in its own currency if the government can just print money however much money it wants. And so here's Jared Bernstein's attempt at a response.
The U.S. government can't go bankrupt because we can print our own money.
It obviously begs the question, why exactly are we borrowing in a currency that we print ourselves? I'm waiting for someone to stand up and say, why do we borrow our own currency in the first place?
Like you said, they print the dollar. So why does the government even borrow?
Well, some of this stuff gets, some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money and it definitely lends that money, which is why the government definitely prints money and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. Yeah, they sell bonds, right? Since they sell bonds and people buy the bonds and lend them the money. Yeah, so a lot of times, at least to my ear with MMT, the language and the concepts can be kind of unnecessarily confusing, but there is no question that the government prints money and then it uses that money to, so, Yeah, I guess I'm just, I can't really talk. I don't get it. I don't know what they're talking about. Like, because it's like the government clearly prints money. It does it all the time. And it clearly borrows. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this debt and deficit conversation. So I don't think there's anything confusing there.
I'm really confused. That is Biden's chief economic advisor. And it makes more sense when you realize that he got his bachelor's degree in music. But, you know, I digress. So anyway, I was like, what is going on here? Why is he fumbling over this question? But also, this idea of modern monetary theory is very interesting to me. The government is just printing money like crazy. So why is it borrowing money in a currency that it can just print endlessly and adding to our national debt? So Zach Abraham knew a lot about this topic. And so I thought, because that clip was all over the news, I wanted to ask him about the clip, but also MMT.
What's really funny about this clip is I think that this clip is really at the heart of so many different things that are going on financially right now. Meaning the origins of this clip really date back to 1971 when we first got off the gold standard, when Nixon took us off the gold standard. One of the reasons he's tripping over that and really doesn't know what to say, like for instance, he goes, well, the U.S. government, it lends. No, they don't lend, they borrow. Right? So he's got that mixed around. But the reason he's stumbling over it is there are so many mechanisms and machinations that are built into our financial system that were there for really good reason. Because if the United States government wanted to spend more when they were on the gold standard, they had to adhere to the gold standard. They had to go out and buy a certain amount of gold to back the currency they were printing, right? And so you had a legitimate, it was like they were legitimate books. You had to balance them. You had to make, well, now that you're completely fiat, there's a lot of these things that you don't really need to do. For instance, and they bring up this point, the reason the US government used to borrow money and pay an interest rate on it was because that gave them the capital they needed without having to print more currency, mm-hmm. right? And so hopefully growing tax receipts over the years would cover the repayment of those debts. Well, if you no longer have a gold standard and you're not tied to anything, it brings up a really good question. If all we're doing is funding the government via printed money, if we're printing money to buy debt, why don't we just pull the middleman out and just print away?
Right.
Right. Why are we doing this? Why are we having individuals pay taxes? If we can run $2 trillion annual deficits and we just fill the gap in with printed money, why does anybody need to pay taxes? Right? And this is, it's one of those things that occurs. It kind of reminds me of like kids, you know, it's sort of like economic Lord of the Flies, right? All the rules are removed and you start tugging at these basic questions like, why don't we need to beat that kid up? Mm. Why don't we, you know, why can't we, you know, eat dessert for every single meal and all these kinds of things? And in a fiat currency world, the answer is, well, you can, right? There's nothing holding you down anymore. Now, eventually that's going to catch up to you, right? Eventually your currency will lose all of its value.
So this MMT, right? Modern monetary theory.
Yep.
I guess from your answer, I didn't glean whether you support that. I mean, the idea of obviously not, but like, is this documentary trying to point out how absurd that is? Or are they trying to point out that that's just what we should do?
Yeah, they're trying to point out it's what we should do. And like I said, it's the kids. It's the perfect analogy. It's a high school party, right? Like everybody's having fun. And what could go wrong at midnight?
Yeah.
Right. Like, and you know, everybody's loaded. And what's the old adage? Nothing good happens after midnight. Right. And so this is the road to perdition that economies go down. And this time we're doing it based off the belief that we're the world's economic and military superpower and nothing can dethrone the world. Right. Britain had similar beliefs at one point. Spain had similar beliefs at one point. Rome had certain beliefs at one point. And it's very hard when you're dealing with currencies. Really what you're dealing with is confidence. So it's really hard to pin when confidence breaks or it erodes. But no, this puts you on a trajectory where your currency becomes, I mean, just look what's happened in the last 5 years since COVID. Right? Like we're running 7% deficits to GDP, the highest we've run since World War II, when we were saving the entire world from Nazi Germany, right? We're not doing that now, right? We're just doing it in social spending and giving it away. But every single day you do it and there's no, and the bad feedback loop doesn't hit you, you think, hey, this is working.
Right.
Right. This is the tonic we needed. And it's going to end really abruptly and really fast. And the way that we think it's going to end is one of two ways. And this is another reason, this lack of understanding about MMT and the way that, and we're not currently operating MMT, so to speak, but we're operating in a way that's pretty akin to it.
Yeah.
Right.
You've talked about this a lot, just printing money, printing money, printing money.
Yeah. So MMT suggests that rather than using interest rate policy to rein in inflation, you should use tax adjustments up and down. They probably have a point about that. But then they go on to say, this is the way it works. And you go, no, no, no. This is the way it works when you're the world reserve currency. Okay. The problem is this will be what gets you from being or gets you kicked out of being the world reserve currency. And when you're not the world reserve currency, you're going to have some problems on your hands.
Yeah.
Right. Because I mean, it's ludicrous. We can print prosperity out of thin air, but that's the problem of going down this road is that it's sort of like the guy that jumps off the 100-foot skyscraper and you ask him in the middle, how are things going? He's halfway down. He goes, so far, so good. Right.
Yeah.
Now, we all know 50 floors down, he's going to have a rude awakening. But that's kind of that cognitive dissonance in the middle where, everybody's like, hey, it's not bothering us so far.
It seems like to me, after talking to you about it, that the reason that Jared Bernstein is stuttering so much is maybe not that he doesn't understand the question, but Bidenomics is sort of built on this idea. And so he's trying to suggest, hey, this is a really dumb idea that doesn't make sense. But at the same time, like, Bidenomics is about just printing money.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that angle. But yeah, there probably really is something to that, because what he's probably realizing in that moment is that I think that that's complete lunacy, but oh, wait a second, that's sort of what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Right. And it begs the question, why are you it literally, there's so much of this that they are doing that is purely based on tradition.
Yeah.
Right. Like if we're going to have the Fed print money and buy US government debt, why are we going through that practice? Why don't you just have them print the money and hand it to the Treasury? Just give them the money, right? Why do we need to buy the debt? What does the debt even mean when it's on the Fed balance sheet?
Right.
Theoretically, at any moment, the Fed could just say, hey, we're going to forgive this debt,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's just all of this stuff is just really ridiculous. Like, so the MMT people have a point pointing this out and saying it's meaningless machinations. It is, but it didn't used to be, because we had an actual system that was based on hard dollars and accounting and financials and, things that really mattered, right? Gravity existed. But now you see it today, and it is kind of a funny thing they point out, because you go, okay, you're not adhering to any rules.
Right.
You're just printing writ large whenever you feel like it. So why are we pretending that we still need to do these things on the margin?
That's so interesting. I just always appreciate Zach's ability to explain this stuff to us. If you want someone who has a brain managing your retirement and protecting it, reach out to Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. You can also listen to his radio show, KnowYourRiskRadio.com, KnowYourRiskRadio.com. The Know Your Risk portfolio review that they do, it's no pressure. It's just a good way to see if you're overexposed to risk. You only get one retirement. So do not put it at risk. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. I find that entire conversation fascinating to me, because I can't wait to watch this documentary, but you see the clip going around, right? And everybody just wants to make fun of Jared Bernstein because it's easy to do so, because he's Biden's chief economic advisor and he sounds like he has no idea what he's talking about. But then it's another thing to use that clip to have a broader conversation about what's happening in the United States and printing money endlessly while at the same time saying that MMT folks are absolutely nuts. But I think this documentary and the folks who push MMT do point out a stunning hypocrisy and dangerous way, the stunning hypocrisy and the dangerous way that the U.S. government is running and how our economy is built. So really fascinating subject, and I want to learn more about it. So I'm going to watch that documentary, even if the people who are putting it together are lunatics. All right. Speaking of lunatics, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. In an interview with CNN, President Joe Biden was asked about Americans who are struggling. And to that, the president basically says, not my fault. It's greedy companies and struggling Americans. Where?
What about, I mean, but there's real pain. I mean, grocery prices are up 30%, more than 30% since the beginning of the pandemic. And people are spending more on food and groceries than they have at any time, really, in the past 30 years. I mean, that's a real day-to-day pain that people
feel. It really is, and it's real. But the fact is that if you take a look at what the men people have, they have the money to spend. It angers them and angers me that you have to spend more. For example, the whole idea of this notion that Senator Casey talked about, shrinkflation. I think it's on your program.
Same price for a smaller bottle of juice or something.
For example, Snickers bar, they did a thing. And it's like 20% less for the same price. That's corporate greed. That's corporate greed. And we've got to deal with it. And that's what I'm working on.
Yeah, corporate greed. Absolutely not inflation, and absolutely not the fact that it even costs those companies more to make the products that they sell. Oh, and yeah, if you can't afford groceries, that's all in your mind. You have the money to spend. The president says so. That has been your sanity check for today, and that has been today's episode of Undivided. We've got a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers coming up. We're speaking to a man who is being charged after he decided to pursue a person who stole one of his vehicles when the police said they couldn't pursue. He's now being charged with a crime. So we're going to have a conversation about whether we are heading toward vigilantism in this state because of some of the soft on crime policies. So if you are a subscriber, we will see you on Sundays with Subscribers. If you are not, well, why the heck not? You can sign up for just $5 a month at UndividedPod.com. Take part in our daily subscriber show polls. Join us on Sundays with Subscribers. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com.